नारद उवाच
हिभिक्षुभिः
विप्रविष्टे विप्रवासिते विज्ञानादेष्टृभिः मम वर्तमानो वर्तमानो वयस्याद्ये तदा एतद् अकर्षम् नारद उवाच विभिक्षुभिर्विप्रावसिते विज्ञानादेष्टृभिर्मम वर्तमानो वयस्याद्ये तर एतदकर्षम् नारद उवाच विभिक्षुभिर्विप्रवासिते विज्ञानादेष्टृभिर्मम वर्तमानो वयस्याद्ये तर एतदकर्षम् नारद उवाच विभिक्षुभिर्विप्रवासिते विज्ञानादेष्टृभिर्मम वर्तमानो वयस्याद्ये तर एतदकर्षम्
Bye. parāśike vijyāna reśrīmā vārāna vāyāśyāne tārētā takārāśam.
Narada uvāca.
Narada uvāca.
Śrī Narada said.
Śrī Narada said.
Bhikshubhihi,
Bhikshubhihi,
by the great sages,
by the great sages,
Vipravasite,
Vipravasite,
having departed for other places,
having departed for other places,
Vijnana,
Vijnana,
scientific spiritual knowledge,
scientific spiritual knowledge,
Adreshtribihi,
Adreshtribihi,
those who imparted unto me,
those who imparted unto me,
Mama,
Mama,
mine,
mine,
Vartamana,
Vartamana,
present,
present,
Vayasi Adye,
Vayasi Adye,
before this life,
before this life,
Tata,
Tata,
thereafter,
thereafter,
Etat,
Etat,
this much,
this much,
Akarasham,
Akarasham,
performed,
performed.
Translation. Sri Narada said, the great sages who had imparted scientific knowledge of transcendence to me departed for other places, and I had to pass my life in this way. Purport. In his previous life, when Naraji was impregnated with spiritual knowledge by the grace of the great sages, there was a tangible change in his life, although he was only a boy of 5 years. That is an important symptom visible after initiation by the bona fide spiritual master. Actual association of devotees brings about a quick change in life for spiritual realization. How it so acted upon the previous life of Sri Narada Muni is described by and by in this chapter. So now, Vyasadeva wanted to know what happened to Narada Muni after the sages had initiated him. What happened? What went on? So we see that the point is that he was initiated and then they left. So then what transpired? Because it's seen that he became a very great personality. Narada Muni, as we know it, is, you know, he's Narada Rishi. He's the greatest of all the demigods. He's the Acharya of our line. He is always there. All the pastimes of the Lord, he is there. He is seen in all the spheres. There's no sphere where you don't find him in the spiritual and material world. So his position is very special. So he wants to know, how is it this was attained? Because by the sounds of it, he only had those 4 months with these great sages. He took prasad, the remnants, once. And then they left and he never met them again. And after that, now he's Narada Muni. Besides that, that was in the last creation. So how all this is going on? Because the purpose is one wants to see, it's not just an interest just to know, oh, did you hear this, did you hear that? It's not just something to talk about. But the principle is that it's been heard about for the purpose to follow in the footsteps. Because following in the footsteps is based on instruction. What has been done, the instruction and the example given according to that instruction. While imitation means simply just doing what they did without following the instruction. Because then it may be they're doing something that they can do that someone else can't do. You know, there's always that situation. If someone who's very expert in something, he can do things that someone who's new cannot do. So that's imitation, if one tries that. But following in the footsteps means following the instruction. So Narada Muni then was initiated, and after this initiation, then Prabhupada mentions that there's a change. This is a... Prabhupada's making the point. This is very important, that there is a change is seen. If there's no change, means nothing happened. Initiation didn't... Nothing significant took place. So either spiritual master was not bona fide, or the disciple did not take the situation seriously. One or the other. So here we see that it took place very nicely. There was a change. So that means both were bona fide. So this change means that there is focus, there's determination, there's the actual desire to obtain to perfection, to obtain to the transcendental position. Because if that change doesn't happen, then what's the difference than before? It's not a fashion. Prabhupada always make the point, it's not a fashion to have a spiritual master like that. One can do that, of course, but that's not the point. Fashion is not so important here. Okay, you want to worry about your house, your neighborhood, your car, your cut of your clothes, this, that, then it's important, then fashion. But if it's a matter of the spiritual matter, it's not fashion. Right? Nowadays, oh, they have a guru, my guru said this, guru said that. They continue doing whatever they're doing. Right? This adds a little sentiment to their life. Right? A little be nice, be good, don't get angry. You know, tolerate, okay, you got to tolerate the crazy director, or you got to tolerate the other actors, you know, like that, you know, like this. Now and again, you do something, you appear, you know, at some entertainment program for free, you know, or something good. All these nice things that I learned from my guru, yes, I should be good, nice. But that's not what guru's for. Guru should mean is a change in the life. Actual change. Otherwise, then we see as a guru changes also. Today, one has this guru. Tomorrow, then he's, you know, considered a foolish man sitting on some hill somewhere. Right? So this is not how it functions. It should be that it lasts. So it's more than just sentiment. There's an actual change in the character, change in the life. This actually makes the situation. So this is what Narada is pointing out here, is because of this contact, there was a change. Therefore, that is where all his perfection is coming from. Because it is wondered, how is it he has this spiritual consciousness, how he became Narada Muni, how he remembers all this. You know, all these amazing things. But all those amazing things come back to this one point, is the shelter of the great devotees. So with that shelter, therefore there was a change. And by that change, then Narada Muni became who he was. So that's the position. That's the important point to glean here, is that the root of all of this is going to be the instruction he heard. Because from now on, when he goes out, he travels, he perfects his life and his self-realization, it's all going to be based on what he heard and gained from these advanced devotees. It's not going to be something different from this. Right? It's not some mystic thing. No, it's a practical point. The sages instructed him. He takes these instructions to heart. He follows them. He practices them. Then, in that pursuance, he attains perfection. So that's what's going on. So one has to take the order of the spiritual master seriously. One has to follow that. One has to make it one's life and soul. One does that, one's life is changed. By doing that, one attains perfection. So this is the principle that is being there, is that there should be a change. It shouldn't be that business as usual. That whatever we were doing before, now we're doing again. No, it should be that whatever we were doing before, that changes. Or at least it progresses. Right? It means if it was not useful for Krishna consciousness, it changes. If it was useful, then it progresses. But there should be something dynamic should happen. Because that means that one is serious. Because spiritual life is a serious matter. And by accepting it as such, then one focuses on it and one tries to make it happen. Otherwise, if one doesn't focus on it, doesn't try to make it happen, it won't happen. That's the principle. If it doesn't happen, then what's the use? Right? We're in this material world. We've been in the material world. We'll continue to be in the material world. But if we take seriously the instruction of the spiritual master, then we're out of the material world. We go back to the spiritual world. So that's useful. Because otherwise, what is in this material world? What's in the material world is simply the concept of happiness that is born of mental concoction. Right? Krishna mentions this many, many times. Whenever you see giving up sense gratification, you always see that it's always referred to as coming from mental concoction. It's always referred to this way. Because it's concocted that it is going to give you happiness. The principle is that it's going to be happy. Right? Principle, everybody's looking for happiness. But what is that definition of happiness? That from one individual to the next changes. That's the point. That's why it's mental concoction. Because what one person says is happiness, another person doesn't. Right? One person, you know, in the morning, gets up, you know, sees frost on the window, you know, fresh snow on the ground. They go out, open the door, stand outside with the door open, take a deep breath and go, fresh air, very nice. The next person is yelling, hey, close the door, you know. So that's the point, is that it's mental concoction. It doesn't actually exist. It's based on something that does exist, means happiness in the spiritual world does exist. Right? It does. But in the material world, it doesn't exist. This is the fun. Right? I mean, it's not talked about too much because then people would lose their enthusiasm. Because the point is work is important. Right? Our endeavor for spiritual life, our devotion to the Lord, it's all expressed through activity, through endeavor. So one has to be endeavoring either on the material or the spiritual platform. So the expression must be there through activity. Now if we say that material life is just mental concoction, then we might lose our enthusiasm to pursue it. Because, okay, spiritual life is not, you know, is something different. And so therefore, why should I be doing material activities? Problem is, because we don't know spiritual, we give up material activity, endeavor, and then we have nothing. This is what Arjuna did. He saw, okay, I'm not going to enjoy out of all this, so I just give it up. But Krishna's pointing out is, no, you still must endeavor, but now you must endeavor in the proper attitude. Right? Before you were endeavoring with mental concoction. Now you endeavor without that mental concoction. Right? What's the endeavor he's going to do? Right? He's not of brahminical nature. He's kshatriya nature. So therefore he should follow kshatriya dharma. He should do that without mental concoction. Right? That's the point. So therefore the shastras they mention this, but it also mentions don't disturb the minds of the ignorant. Because the ignorant then, to them, the material energy is very important. Enjoying material energy is very important. So even if they, when coming in contact with devotional service, there may be the concept that I will endeavor for something. It's in connection with Krishna. It's something I want. I like position. Okay, so therefore I endeavor for position, but position in connection with Krishna. Right? I will use this position for Krishna. I will be temple president. I will be this. I will be that. And I will do it nicely for Krishna. I have the ability, I do it for Krishna. But the inspiration is the position. Right? Means we want to serve Krishna, but in doing so, our inspiration is for some material gain that we will use for Krishna. Right? Rather than directly, I just want to please Krishna, and the facility I have is this particular material ability. Does that make some sense? Yes? No? Yeah. Say it again. Okay. Is that in the beginning we may be inspired to endeavor very strongly for some devotional activity because of the facility we're going to get from it. But because of the sincere desire, that facility will be used for Krishna. So it's not wrong. It's not a problem. But then the problem comes is if we lose the interest in that activity, many times we'll stop doing service. Right? Somebody is, like we gave an example, someone's very interested in position. And because of that, they'll work very hard and do all the duties of that position. And they'll be considered very good in that position. And so in this way, their devotional life is prospering. But then with time, due to the difficulties that come up from that, people making comments about it, what they read from the scriptures, their own purity, purification from performing devotional service, associating with those who are advanced that don't have interest in this, then they lose interest in position. Then, because their inspiration for their service was because of that desire for the position, then there may be a lull in their devotional service. The devotional service may then, they don't know what to do. They become bewildered as to what they should do next because they have no inspiration to be the lead in the leading position because they have no interest in leadership now. But because that was their medium of service to Krishna, then what do they do for service? This becomes a difficulty then. So at that point, then one has to re-evaluate one's life, right? That's generally what one does. Means this can happen at any time, but it's generally guaranteed to happen around the 40s, right? And the modern nomenclature is called midlife crisis. Because one doesn't have the energy to pursue all these youthful ideas that one had. And one sees it, one doesn't get anything out of it. One has been the temple president for the last 20, 30 years, and it's only trouble from the time you get up to the time you take rest. So then, why do that? So one reassesses one's life, you know, one's priorities, one's values, one's this, one's that. But that may or may not be beneficial if simply you replace the position of temple president with wealth, or, how do you say, quality emotional interaction with my family, or welfare work, or just being a nice moral guy, then that reassessment, factually in the long run, was an absolute waste of time. Then that one could assess, that's good. That means one can be introspective and contemplative. So, almost came up with contraspective. So then, that's good, that's nice. You know, but the result actually wasn't of any use. So one has to see is that actually the real thing is nothing of this material world has any value. And just like the principle of you can test one grain of rice, and from testing the one grain of rice, you can understand the rest of them. Then that's the position. It's also good if you see that we're looking that way, but it's not at you, then there must be someone behind you. So as we move this way, then you don't move your head this way to catch the good vibes. You know, because otherwise then I move this way, then you move this way. And then the person behind is trying to... Sorry. One has to see is that by tasting that, now if position doesn't give any taste, neither will emotion, neither will sensuality, neither will wealth, neither will any other variety of power, you know, and either neither will liberation, because dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, none of them give any taste. There's a seeming taste, but the problem is you deal with it and it doesn't give anything. So you always have to go back, and supposedly there's something, that's the mental concoction. Supposedly it's a nice thing. But if you actually add it up, you'll see it's a constant problem. So what happens is one's original inspiration, that idealism, gets lost in the constant difficulty. So then one sees that. But unless one contemplates deep enough to understand, well, maybe it's the principle of my attachment to position that is my problem. And it doesn't matter if it's position or anything, any one of them will give you problem. So therefore one changes that. That's the... Then it becomes progressive. Then the actual, this crisis actually gives rise to dynamic truth. Otherwise it's just a distraction. You know, if one relives one's youth at 50, it's okay. But it's not that glorious. The good thing about it, one is one's enthusiastic again. One takes up some activities. One, you know, does them very nicely. But many times you will see that because the original thing that one felt some anxiety about was based on a pure spiritual idealism, though it was mixed without our knowing it. You know, it was unconsciously mixed. Then the tendency is to, at this reevaluation, is to be a little more so-called, quote-unquote, realistic and practical. So in other words, what before was giving up one's economic, you know, or social or economic or sensual platforms, now in this reevaluation, they are very much considered as serious foundational parts of the new us, you know, after our reevaluation, our new identity. It's very much rooted in artha and kama, because before they were left, so there's always the idea, since there is faith in material happiness, then there is faith that, okay, before I push too much moksha or dharma, you know, on that side, so now I'll push more artha and kama. That was the actual problem. I was a little too fanatic. I pushed it too much that side. So then the natural logical thing is I will do the pendulum swing and swing it. How much I was too much that way, I will swing it too much this way, right? That creates balance, isn't it? Like you take a ruler and you put it at 3 inches this side, 9 inches that side, and it falls off onto the right. So the perfect then balance is to push it to the left 9 inches with 3 inches on the right, isn't it? No, yeah. But you will see practically everybody in their midlife makes that particular logical assumption. It's how much it was too much that way, I'll do it too much this way. That will make it balanced. Right? Just like you want to have a nice balanced committee, then you have to have two fanatics on opposite sides, right? So the whole meeting can be completely disrupted. Nothing can get done. No one can get everywhere. Everything is blocked, vetoed, you know, stalled, you know, stonewalled, you know, everything like this. And you see is that every time that there's a discussion about by people who are not going to be in the meeting, they will always pick people that are exact opposites for the meeting. They'll never pick equal-minded, because then you'll create an old boys club and then they'll take it away and we won't have any control. So this is the epitome of midlife, you know, logical intelligence. It's whatever I did for the last 30, 40 years, I'll do the opposite and then I'll be happy. So it didn't do the karmis any good, and it's definitely not going to do the devotees any good. But unfortunately, the modes of nature are more expert than the devotees. So Maya tricks everybody. So the point is one has to go to the next stage, is it's actually position or any other thing of material life has absolutely no meaning. The only thing of real meaning is Krishna consciousness. The association of devotees. Like here, this whole point is by the association of these devotees, you attain perfection. So that association That is what's going to make it. So therefore, it's not now I look for these material things. Now I look for where can I get that kind of spiritual association, spiritual activities. Where can I get these things? That's what we need. So if that is there, then it starts to become progressive. Because then it's in that association, I will see what service I can do for Krishna. Right? It goes to the next stage. The beginning stage is what do you want to do for Krishna? The next stage after that is what can I do for Krishna? Right? It's a subtle difference. It means because both of them are based on what I can do. But what I want to do is more my attachment to my material abilities. What I can do is a detachment from my material abilities. So therefore, it's just what I can do. You know, like that. It would be like the difference is you go into the kitchen and there's only some potatoes there. Okay, now if I'm attached to potatoes, then and particularly I'm going to try to make that preparation, even though I don't have any of the other things to do with the potatoes. You know, I don't have the other ingredients to make the preparation I want. But because I'm attached to it, I will endeavor anyway. And it will come out, it will kind of be like that, but it won't have the taste or anything else. So then it won't be of the quality we wanted. Rather than look at it, okay, I have these potatoes and these particular spices and facilities, I can make this preparation, which may be different. In any case, potatoes are there. So management may be there, that may be our ability. But we're not doing it because of that. So we see, well, where can it fit nicely? We've had so much trouble because we've been trying to fit it into here. Maybe it fits better into there. Or maybe it's just that's the way management is. Everything has problems. There's nothing that doesn't have problems. So therefore, I'm not doing it for the glory that comes from it. Oh, everyone says I did a great job. Or I'm coming because of after doing it, I will have certain facilities, and in that facilities, I will be able to peacefully live my life. Right? So it's not either passion or goodness. Or it may be just that I think I'm the greatest, you know, God's gift of management to the world, so it's ignorance. So in other words, what goes beyond the modes, this is what I could do for Krishna. And it's going to have its natural problems that come along with it. Because that's the material world. So it's just a matter of the approach to the same thing. Either one of them are dynamic. That's the basic principle. That's why Krishna never recommends stopping activity. Means you can go from one activity to another activity. You can't not do activity. So if one can go from fully physically active activity to fully absorbed mentally activity, that's fine also. Right? That's the difference between the neophyte yogi and the advanced yogi. The advanced yogi will do all the activity within the mind because they're on the transcendental platform. So they're fully engaged just by thinking of Krishna and his pastimes and this. He doesn't need to physically be engaged, but he's engaged nonetheless. So because someone below that platform, then the body needs to be engaged to catch the mind. Or the mind being engaged pulls the body along with it. In either way, the neophyte, you engage the body, then the mind will follow. And for the Madhyama, the mind is connected to Krishna, so the body will follow. For the Uttama, then the body and mind, the mind is absorbed in Krishna. You don't need the physical body because then you use the spiritual form. So in any case, activity is there. That's the principle. That's why Govindaji is the most important of the deities because he is the pastime. Madan Mohan is the attraction to be involved in the pastime. Gopinath is the affection you have for Krishna in performing that pastime, or the need to perform the pastime is because of that. But Govindaji is the pastime. So therefore, activity is the thing. And therefore, we can see of the deities, then the Siksha Guru is representing Govindaji. Therefore, the instruction of the spiritual master is the most important. So it's a consistent line. So that's why it's not so much push the point. It's push that material enjoyment is useless and you must get into spiritual life. And position, wealth, family, all these things are there. But it's not overemphasized too much, because otherwise that's not the point anyway. If one attaches oneself to Krishna, these automatically disappear. But one has to be willing to give them up. So one uses them in the Lord's service for pleasing Krishna, because pleasing Krishna is the main thing, they'll evaporate. And then that pleasing of Krishna transforms it into being fully absorbed in Krishna's service. You know, so what one wants to avoid is that mode of ignorance where one just gets distressed and just gives up doing activity. Like that. So that's why it's always seen as one must be active, one must be engaged in some way. Does that make any sense?
When you're talking about the person has to be active, so this component of guna and karma according to our birth, they have a particular tendency. But this is also subjective only to the body and the mind.
Yes.
We as the soul, we are not active. And Lord Krishna said, eating, sleeping, all these are done by nature, not by the soul. So if someone, Krishna said, if we engage in devotion, we become expert. Expert means any activity will be done with the mercy of Krishna, we call our effect. So we should really try to engage ourselves according to the modes, even though we constantly be transcending the modes, or then going into the modes. We should just take any service that's available and try to do it for Krishna with desire to make it perfect.
Question is that we have a conditioned nature which deals with the mind and the body, and so that's suited for particular activities. But the soul is not connected with that. It's transcendental. So the soul is not acting. That's just the conditioned nature is operated by the modes. So now, is it important to engage that conditioned nature, or is it important, since the soul is transcendental, to engage in any activity and perfect that? Because the point is to be active and to perfect an activity for Krishna. So the point comes down is still the field of action, because that's always what's there. I think it was the 15th chapter's field of action, is that the field that is set by the modes of nature, the soul can function within that. So when we are transcendental, we're not transcendental in another field. It means we're not mystics. You know, it's like we're here on this planet, so our field is on this planet. It's not that now we'll decide, oh, I'm transcendental, so I'll function on, you know, Janaloka or Tapaloka field. No, if you can physically get yourself there, then you can do that. If you're a yogi, you can go there. Like Yoga Samuni, when he's not, you know, around here, he goes to Brahmaloka, because that's where yogis are. He's a yogi. So he goes there to hang out with the yogis. Like that. Like after that whole program with Amrish Maharaj, then he understood the devotees are the greatest yogis, so that was a big realization for him. So he went to discuss that with the yogis in Brahmaloka. So that's it. So our field of activity is this earth, right? Within the earth, then, okay, here we are, you know, in India, in Bengal, and Bengal, and Mayapur. And in Mayapur, then we have certain field that we move in. And that field is because of our conditioned nature. So the problem is not that transcendence means not using material nature, because in any case, whether we use material nature A or material nature B, it's still material nature. So the problem isn't trying to avoid the condition of nature. That's what Arjuna was trying to do. The point is just what facility you have for the field that you're in, what is most favorable for Krishna consciousness, that's used. So if things are very ideal, generally the facility will be in line with the conditioned nature, because the conditioned nature works in a certain way. It makes it very easy. You're not going upstream against the current. So it's very easy. You know, like we were saying before, one has administrative abilities, that's the easiest thing for them to do. So if there's facility for it, one does it. If not, one reduces it. You know, just like the Pandavas, they're emperors.
Or they can't be emperors. Okay, give us 5 villages. We'll manage 5 villages. That's, you know, enough for us. Because they have to administrate. So even if it's a village, okay. So that is there. Because otherwise, then to try to go against the nature might not be progressive. In emergency situations, then we do whatever we can in anything. That's the normal thing. But when the facility for doing normal activity is there, emergency wouldn't be taken up. Right? Because otherwise, then it becomes too difficult and the mind and the body become disturbed. That's the point. If they're not being disturbed, one can continue it, however long. But as soon as that disturbance becomes to the point where one may give up activity or take up an activity that's not useful, right? Instead of being, okay, it's like this. The person's a cook, right? But it's been decided that book distribution is the topmost and every other service in the temple is absolute and total maya. Okay, so now the cook is going to go out and distribute books. They can do it, they like doing it. They can go out on the weekend or on Hari Nam or like that. But every day, day in and day out, the brain is hard for them to bend around. You know, you give them a pile of subjects and you tell them, okay, now we got to cook in the next 3 hours for 100 people. That is an anxiety. They can do that. But to figure out how to get the books out, deal with all the different mentalities, they're having trouble. But it's an emergency. Okay, it's a marathon. No, they do it. No problem. But when the marathon's over, then it's naturally go back to the cooking. And then whenever they can, go out on book distribution. Now if the authority decides, no, this is nonsense, he should be out of book distribution. Now he may do it. 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, maybe even a few years. But one day, he packs up, leaves the temple, leaves all service under any authority within the movement, and moves outside, gets himself a job, and you rarely see him. Right? So now the authority who pushed that emergency now would actually have to ask himself, was it worth it? Of course, they could always say they weren't sincere. Right? That's the standard answer I've heard from every authority. Or the benefit he got from that was worth a lifetime of a job outside. Yeah, of course it is, but he could have been still doing more service. So that's the point. Then one has to then, okay, well, what was the purpose of the leadership? Why was he pushing it? Did he want his temple to be the top temple? Was he, you know, he has chivalry with, you know, the temple president in that temple. So he has to prove, you know, what is the reason that he pushed the person to the loop? So that's his material conditioning that has not been properly engaged. So that's the whole idea, is why the conditioned nature needs to be understood. But it's not a matter of modern psychology. Modern psychology doesn't know these things like that. It's a matter of what is the nature within the combination of the spiritual, the transcendental path, and the varnashram system. You know, the more transcendental they are, the less varnashram becomes prominent. Then they just if someone's transcendental, then you just automatically by default push the Brahman button, right? But if transcendental is not so much there, then you check which other button it is. Like that. And then see, okay, how do you engage that nature of mission service? Right? Like you see, it wasn't like we were seeing yesterday, that whole point with George Harrison. Here's a person, he came, he was ready to move into the temple, shave up, be one of the boys with everybody else there, Bury Place. Prabhupada said, no, you stay in your position, and from your position, you'll do more. Right? And so we see, then from his position, he gets so many, you know, influential people interested in some way in Krishna consciousness, chanting Hare Krishna, in some way coming closer to Krishna. Well, if he had just, he would have been the guy that was one of the Beatles, you know. And who knows how long he would have, lasted. But then, so that's the point, is that, so one has to see what is the best. And then you see someone who is their nature, like you have today. There are devotees that are book distributors. They were doing it 30 years ago. They're still doing it today. Because it's their nature, it's their ability. So to put them in something else, to put them into management or something else, that would be foolish. But you have a person who, doesn't matter where he is in the world or what book you give him, even what language it is, they can sell the book. I've heard of that. Somebody's in one country, they're speaking the language. They can't distribute as many books as a person that comes from another country doesn't know the language at all. I've heard of that. So that would then be wrong to take them out of that and put it in something else. You know, or like a common thing in education. They take the best teacher and make them the administrator. And then they stop teaching. And then all the students lose out on that good teaching. Excellent teacher, but he may or may not be. Even if he is a great administrator, that's nice. But the kids lose out on that teaching. So that's the whole point. If where someone is expert and the need is there, then that should be engaged. Because if we're looking at it that we're transcendental, then it doesn't matter which one it is. But if one has the ability between something that is of a more transcendental and something less, and one can do them both equally, one will always choose the higher. If that's not available, then you choose the lower. Right? If the person could go out preaching, or he could stay back and clean the temple, and he cleans the temple the best. No one can do it as good as he can. Better he preaches. Right? But if the other thing, he just is too shy to talk, this, that, then better he cleans the temple. Then anyone who comes to the temple will just go, wow, this is such a pure place. That's his preaching.
But you were saying that the shishya, to follow the instruction of the Guru, the highest body, and Srila Prabhupada was blessed, he gave instructions and everybody was so completely obedient. They were all raised to different platforms. Then when he left, they more or less followed the wrong law. The was for them to follow law. Mm-hmm. He was able to put people in the Varma and Ashram higher position, even maybe not the wrong position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Prabhupada making a comment. If Prabhupada was here, then the devotees could be elevated up to the top levels of their ability, even seemingly beyond, and that would probably when they drop. We would also see as many times as that they would be doing what they would be doing, but in the purest position. Just like you take one devotee, very close to Prabhupada, like that. And super expert at collecting money. Super expert. And the people he would collect money from, they would consider him as one of themselves. They were top business community. They would consider that he was one of them. He knew them better than they knew themselves. Therefore, there was no trick that they could pull on him. There was nothing they could say that would deter him from getting them to give some money for Krishna's service. So therefore, he was using it the topmost platform. And his money was going to all nice, you know, Krishna conscious projects and programs and preaching and everything like that. Then after Prabhupada's going, then it dropped backward, just he was doing business for himself. In any case, he was making money. So Prabhupada saw that and engaged him. So basically, you would see that's why the devotees, except for a couple, whatever position they were in, if they fell down from that, Prabhupada would have picked them up and immediately stick them back in that position, because that was the best engagement of their conditioned nature. This modern concept that we don't have the spiritual potency to do that, and so therefore we won't engage them in Krishna's service, that's not a good platform. That's why I use the word modern, because modern means non-Vedic. The Vedic position is if they're a manager and they've fallen down, then you catch them and put them back in a management position, because that will fully engage them in Krishna's service. To say they can't manage, can't have any position, that is a lack of understanding on the part of those who are making that decision. And they may say, well, the people in general don't like. The people in general do what you tell them. When Prabhupada was here, devotees fell down left, right, and center. And nobody cared. And when they came back, everyone went, Haribo. You know, you heard that this guy blooped and was that. Now he's back and he's out there. You didn't care. Someone's a great preacher and he blooped. And then you heard he's back and he's giving class or he's leading kirtan. You went. It wasn't like, oh, that guy was blooped, you know. I don't know if I want to go to this. There was no such mundane concepts in those days. And I use very strongly the term mundane because that's all it is. The point is that's what they could do. Someone was telling me there was this one devotee. And he was gifted speaker. And he had been, I think, out of the movement for like 15, 20 years. And they had a Prabhupada reunion, he came. And they had him speak. And he spoke just as well as the day he left. Because these are gifts of Krishna. They don't go away. Like that. Other things are maybe weakness, but that doesn't go away. Because that's what Krishna gave. That aspect of their nature Krishna is blessed with. And so they can do it amazingly. So if you want them to advance, then you make them do that. But see that they have the association and the direction that they do it properly. So therefore, that should be the statement. We don't have the spiritual potency of Prabhupada to actually try to help the person by giving them association and giving them spiritual direction so that they can actually situate themselves properly. We can only somehow or another try to keep all the plates on top of the little things without falling off. And therefore, since it's a mundane activity, we can't get into the spiritual stuff. Say that, then it's understood. But don't say, only Prabhupada can do that. Because Prabhupada's acharya, and Prabhupada said, do as I do. He gave the example. Someone falls, he put him back. I know of one person, I think he was a sannyasi, fell away and two or three times. He again reinstated him as a sannyasi, made him a preacher because that was his nature. Like that. Because when push comes to shove, the material platform is not the important thing. You know, we use religion against religion. Religion is for the purpose of elevating one to bhakti, situating oneself in bhakti. But we use a religion so that they can't be engaged in bhakti. Because of morality, the person can't perform his duties. Right? The Pandavas never said, Duryodhana is such a nonsense for the gambling match, for his trying to kill the Pandavas, for his enviousness, his everything, that he should not be a king. He should be a pot washer. Right? Did you ever hear any of the Pandavas say that? Never. They simply said, share the kingdom. Actually, it's our kingdom. Right? But we're willing to share it. Right? They never. Ashutama, whatever he did. Drona, whatever he did. Because he was a Brahmin, Drona. So therefore they respected him as a teacher. Ashutama was his son. He was a Brahmin, he was respected. He did some nonsense. Right? But the point is you have to find something that purifies them of their nonsense, then situates them in devotional service. Otherwise, to take them out of any active service, of what benefit has one done? If one says it's because the devotees cannot do, maybe the devotees should be educated as to what is devotional service. Otherwise, then, if we go by that, then that means the Hindus are completely correct. Those who are born Brahmins are fully 100% correct in saying that the Westerners are born in meat-eating families and there's nothing they can do in this life to actually uplift themselves. Otherwise, be nice, be pious, kind of hang around, you know, be inclined towards. And then next life, when they take birth in qualified Indian families, then they can be sannyasis, then they can be preachers, then they can take up and study the Veda. So then all it is we become moralistic smartas, like the smartas are. Smartas are simply moralistic, ritualistic people. That's all. It's nothing new. We say it's the new modern thing. No, it's been going on in India. Smarta has been here since time immemorial. So the modern politically correct paradigm is as old, is as ancient as, you know, the rocks and, you know, Mount Everest. You know, it's like, and it's nothing new. There's always been moralistic smartness. There's always been. There's always been people that feel that socially they're better than everybody else. It's always been there. There's never been a time they weren't there. Non-Vedic people or people who follow Vedas but have completely missed the point have always existed. Right? Because they have to always exist. But the problem is the modern man, because he's up to date, he feels he's the only one that's with it and everybody's out of it. You know, that's the fun. That's it. That's the fun.
That's exactly what you have said, the realization of the one that we didn't make problem. For example, we joined the movement by instructions only. We didn't make it. We did the same. We increased book distribution, increased the temples, increased everything. Now with the lack of faith in the power of instruction, and also so much criticism, and the power of
it. Yeah.
The power of the instruction is there for generations to come. Yeah. So what we have to train is how to be obedient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's making a comment that the Prabhupada's instructions, the evidence of it, that the potencies in the instruction of those who have joined after Prabhupada left, that they took the instruction, they followed it, they were successful. The books went out, the temple was expanded, devotees were made, things developed. So if the faith was there, this instruction followed, it prospered. If that faith was not there, the instruction wasn't followed, then it falls apart like that. So that's, yeah, it's very obvious. You can see. And the amazing thing is if one just follows it, then immediately it happens. That's the point that's being made here in this verse, is that the initiation by the spiritual master, then you can see tangible result. You can see it. So then that means, and initiation means taking the instruction of the spiritual masters of life and soul. That's initiation, not the ritual. So at any moment that one takes the instruction of the spiritual master, you know, of Prabhupada, seriously, from that moment there's a change. And everything starts going up. And as soon as one has doubts it, then immediately everything goes down. You know, it's just like, you know, the, you have, you know, the fan. You turn it on and it goes. It starts beating up like that. You turn it off and it starts going down. It's just, if it, that's all. If it's connected, it works. If it's not connected, it doesn't work. So it's a good, very good point. So that's why it's said that the Vaishnavas, only fools think Vaishnavas die. Because the potency is instruction. Because that's actually all you have anyway. You know, is what you get through the instruction. So this idea is that, you know, unless there's somebody present here today, then, you know, you're not connected. That's also very neophyte. That's not, they'll be presenting it as you got to hear the live siksha, but actually what it is you have to associate with the live body. They're bhavu bodies. They're not siksha bodies. That if the body is here, then you can make advancement. But then by that theory, then unless you're constantly in the room with that body, you won't make advancement. And then if that body goes to the next room to go to the bathroom or take a nap, then what happens to your spiritual life? You know? So that's the point. So if you can live in the next room while they go to the bathroom for that 5 minutes, so 5 minutes is meaningful to Krishna consciousness, then, you know, you could be in the next building or in the next city or in the next country or even in a different generation. Because the instruction is alive. So as long as one has received that instruction from somebody who's connected, then one has that connection. Like we have been given the Gita. So when we read the Gita, we're hearing Krishna and Arjuna speak. A 5,000-year-old conversation is still alive today. Right? It's not that we're just hearing Prabhupada. We're hearing through the medium of Prabhupada. We're hearing that conversation. So we're directly connected to that concept, that conversation, because we're connected to Prabhupada. Same with Rupa Goswami or any of the acharyas. We're the Bhagavatam. We're hearing directly from Sukha Goswami or Sukadeva Goswami, Guru Maharaj. We're hearing directly. But that directness is through that Vayu medium. You know, it's just like, let's say, the conversation is going on in here, someone's standing outside, they come to the window, and they can hear directly the conversation. But at the same time, they're only hearing it because of the window. Because the window is by immediate. If there's a wall, you can't hear it. So because of the guru, that clear by me, we're hearing that conversation. So that's the point, is you can't hear something 5,000 years ago unless you have a connection. Right? And even you can't hear something today unless you have a connection, because what you'll hear with material ears, what you'll do with material mind, material heart. So unless you interpret it spiritually, what you have heard, we, by mental concoction, we interpret it to our advantage or disadvantage. Right? Now, what's going to make the difference that the spiritual master is speaking, that we're not going to do the same exact thing of mental concoction of trying to squeeze out of it our own enjoyment? Right? That's the spiritual connection. That changes it so that now when we hear the sound vibration, we interpret it according to the parampara now, according to the omnaya tattva. Otherwise, then the tendency is we're going to interpret it according to our conditioned nature. That's the choice. You can't have your foot in both boats. It doesn't work. And, you know, that's a modern concept. I'll have both. The best of both, right? You know, laying down on the beach at the Riviera, you know, chanting Japa. The best of both worlds, you know. Doesn't exactly work. At some point, one has to become more prominent than the other. That makes sense. Anything else? Yes.
As you were mentioning about the advanced personalities, they use their mind. They do devotional service or something else in their mind. And we know mind is how powerful is the mind that we can do through the mind. That is for advanced people. And you said there is actually no difference that you can do it physically or you can do it subtly, right? Because the result will be the same. And what about the regular people like us, myself? How powerful is the mind? I mean, when you do something in your mind, negative or positive, doesn't matter. How does it affect you on the life?
Okay, how does the mind affect what we do in the mind affect our life, good or bad? It means if we have desire for doing proper activities, Krishna conscious activities in the mind, we contemplate all that, then we advance. Because whatever we do in the mind is basically what we're going to do. Or we're going to move in that direction. So then if we're always contemplating devotional service and Krishna and his pastimes, then that's what we'll be absorbed in. And if we're contemplating or absorbed in things that are materialistic, mundane, then that's where we're going to get, that's the direction we're going. So it affects the consciousness. What we're meaning there is those advanced devotees of within the mind, then they can be in the spiritual world and render service. So it's actually tangible. From this side, we'll call it, you know, esoteric or mystical or subtle. But on the spiritual realm, it's real.
So basically, pay more attention to what you think first, because it might become a reality.
It means we have to be aware of what we think first, as long as we're thinking. If we're not thinking, then we should just do what we're told. And then by doing what we're told, then we'll become purified, where the brain will actually start to work. You know, thinking is actually a more advanced stage. Like it says that there are moving and non-moving. It means of all living entities, moving is considered better than non-moving. And of those that are moved, those that subsist by intelligence are better. Right? Of those who subsist by intelligence, then human beings are the best. Of humans, Brahmins. Of Brahmins, one who's realized. Like that. So we see is that intelligence is always considered a higher platform. But that's as long as it's working. If it's not working, then we just engage ourselves, engage the body or engage the mind, and just things that it does by habit. And if we can contemplate and all that, nice. But if the contemplation means we stop activity, that's not good. Right? If you have to think for a moment, should I do this or that, and you think about it, that's another thing. But if it's like, until I get, you know, my whole life via this and that, I can't do anything, no, then better to do something, to stand or stop. And while that's going on, then contemplate.
But that means physical activity is more important than mind, because I can, by my mind, I can build a big temple here, it's already there for me.
Yeah, well, as long as it's always there for you. If you built a big temple and it's always there, but there's a few moments like when you're brushing your teeth or you go to the toilet, but it's not there. So that means it's not there. That's my point. But what we're talking about is you have to understand is that what I was referring to is someone who's on the Brahma Buddha platform. So they're not dealing with a mundane mind. They're dealing with their spiritual mind in their spiritual body. They're in the spiritual world, in their spiritual body, rendering spiritual service. That's real. So they're not just imagining it. But on this side, for the Viraja, we just see the person's, you know, resting or, you know, absorbed. You know, they seem to have that, you know, they say, more, I don't know what we call it, ethereal look, you know.
Is there any difference between yugas about the mind? Because something I was told that in Kali Yuga, because it's such a degraded yuga, then you don't basically anything good you think and you do in your mind is you progress, and you are not responsible for the mind. Whatever the mind does, you know, it's like in your mind, if you do a parat for someone, then it's not that. You are responsible 100% like you say in the words. So is it really work that way, or whatever you did in your mind you already committed and you are responsible for that?
Means in the first three ages, whatever you think, you get the reaction for, good or bad. In Kali Yuga, whatever you think good, you get the result for. Whatever you think bad, you don't get the sin for. You don't get the reaction for, but it doesn't mean it doesn't fully the consciousness. Within your mind, you blaspheming devotees, your mind is polluted. And you will move in that direction. And it's just a matter of time before you possibly may actually physically blaspheme. So that's the thing that's there that must always be understood. And it says that you perform, it's just like this. The person kills the animal in sacrifice according to the scripture. There is no sin. Right? The animal will go to the heavenly planets. The person who killed the animal will go to the heavenly planets. Right? There's no sin. Because it's according to the authority of the Veda. Right? So then, the natural thing is, okay, great, I can do that. Why not? But it doesn't mean that the law of karma, that I kill you, you kill me, is not in place. That's why the Shastra term is mam saha. Mam, I, saha, you. I kill you, you kill me. That means, after they come back from the heavenly planets, then the person who was the killer becomes the animal, and the person who was the animal becomes the killer. That will go on. So the point is in Kali Yuga, you will not get the actual reaction that would be there, the sinful reaction for thinking. But it doesn't mean it won't pollute the consciousness and won't have an effect. That if you cultivate that, your mind won't become polluted, because then you'll start to associate, because you think like that all the time, you don't speak it, you'll start to hang out with people who do speak like that. And then it's just a matter of time before you speak like that. And even you hear from them that they spoke like that, you get the reaction there. That's only with your mind. Just because the other person blasphemed and you didn't, but you hearing it and doing nothing about it, either by leaving or correcting them, then you get the reaction for the same one they get. They blaspheme devotees, you hear it, you do nothing about it, you get it also. Right? right? It's just like the one man smoking. You're not smoking. You're sitting next to him, right? And you end up with cancer. Why? Because it's passive smoking. You are smoking. Right? So that's the whole point. It came out of his mouth. It didn't come out of your mouth, but it went into your ears. By the ear, it goes to your heart. From the heart, it came out of your mouth, and now through your ears, it goes into your heart. So it indicates it goes into the heart. So that's the principle. Is the reaction's not there, so therefore one can correct oneself and see this is not good and all that, and one can therefore pull out of this. And none will be the wiser. No one else will know about it. But one can't leave it just saying, oh, there's no reaction. Right? Because that means you're not being active. You're not actively trying to correct it. So actively trying to correct it is what's important.
That's why such a horrible age. It's not reaction to what we think.
Right.
We can be hypocrites.
Yeah.
We can act in a way to think in the normal, but stay to be focused.
Yeah. You made a comment to be hypocritical by hearing, saying one thing, doing another. Anything else? Bhagavatam ki.
Yeah.